Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I am Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And we're paranormal specialists who live in the most haunted city on Earth, Savannah, Georgia. Every day is Halloween in our line of work, so join us as we spin true tales of haunts, murders, and disturbing Savannah history. I'm Madison.
I'm Chris.
And welcome to the most haunted city on Earth. Back to another episode of The Most Haunted City on Earth. My name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And I'm JT Timmons. I couldn't find the camera for a second. I was like, I'm JT.
I was afraid you forgot who you were.
I don't know who I am anymore. It's okay.
Who might I be?
That's Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick.
Patrick. And Jingles. Armed now. For those of you who are just listening, we have a small Harlequin glass face, ceramic face doll with a sword now, carrying a sword.
Yeah, that Chris got for his birthday. Yeah. He has sword. Tiny sword. So now Jingles stole. I don't even know how he did it. He stole one.
Okay. Anyway.
He possessed me to give it to him. He said, I really want that sword. And I was
Bring me the sword.
All right. So, today we have a Q&A for y'all. Maddie, we'll make the announcements real short, but basically we're going to the Conjuring House and become a pair junkie for all your Conjuring House needs on January 25th, 2024. We'll be going to the Conjuring House in Rhode Island in the bitter cold. We are going to be doing a multi-part episode series leading up to the Conjuring House. And it's going to be super fun, and we're lit, and Pair Junkies, we are going to live stream for them nonstop, so all that good stuff.
Yeah, and JT might turn 30 in the Conjuring House.
We're hoping he'll make it to 30.
At 5:05 a.m.
We aren't taking bets, though. The bets are on. There's a 10-to-1 chance that he will make it. So that's good. But those are good odds. But if you bet against him making it, you could walk with a lot of cash.
We will have a getaway hotel, though.
We are getting a getaway hotel.
If in case we do not make it through the night. Because there's always the off chance. I have faith in us that we'll be fine.
We're definitely not leaving. It was $1,500.
Yeah. JT's like,
a demon could stand right in front of me and say, you're going to die tonight. And I'd be like, great. Let me get this on film.
Yeah.
That's big talk for a small room in Savannah, Georgia. When we're there, might be a different tune.
Yeah.
It will not.
When the broke neck lady comes at you and is like,
The syphilitic broke neck lady.
Yes.
We might add.
Yeah.
I didn't know about all that now. What?
We'll be discussing a lot of this in upcoming episodes because leading up to the Conjuring House, we're going to be doing deep dives into the Conjuring House, the Conjuring lore, all of it. Maybe we'll even do like a movie review of the Conjuring movie.
I'm currently reading Andrea Perrin's book right now in preparation. Yeah, it's interesting.
I just lay in her lap like a lap dog and she just reads it.
Yeah, because JT refuses to hold a book in his face.
I read the news. That's what I do. I read Associated Press.
And we'll discuss all of this in depth. I'm realizing that we could easily start right now and deep dive into it. But we'll reserve that. We'll hold off for episodes in the future. And if you're a Patreon, there'll be exclusive episodes for just podcast listeners. We'll definitely be doing some examinations of the lore and the history of the Conjuring House.
Yeah, and if you're trying to get all those live streams where you're like literally like a fly in the wall, because it's really expensive to go to the Conjuring House.
It is.
You know, so it's like, and not everybody has access to that. So, you know, if you're trying to do that, become a Parajunkie. So
right, for the price of a Parajunkie subscription, you come with us because we'll be doing live streaming.
Absolutely. All right, here we go. Let's see. Oh, real fast. Before I get into the Q&A, I saw a ghost. And I've waited to tell you.
What?
Yeah, I know. I've never seen ghosts like that. Unless it was the little boy ghost at the end of the hall. But is it doing it again?
No. Okay, I step back. All right, to listen. I'm making myself comfortable.
Yeah, I saw a ghost. From what I think is a ghost. It was yesterday. I was on the couch. You were in the bathroom. I think you were cleaning, and I was getting the book ready because you're about to read it to me. And I saw out of my peripheral vision this, like, it was like a brownish, tan thing just move, and I thought at first it was like a car outside, like a glare or something. Mm-hmm. But it definitely wasn't. It was like actually in the living room there, and I almost called you out to like see if there was anything there, because, like, you know, she, if you don't know, Madison, like, you know, sees ghosts on command. but literally just like anything. And I was just like, that was most likely an entity right there in front of the couch. Like,
I'm not surprised.
It looked a little like an older gentleman.
Oh, you saw Jim.
I don't know.
No, that's
I don't know what makes sense.
Jim's still all over the house.
A little hunched. It was creepy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, let's not do this.
Oh, good. I'm glad you met Jim finally.
Yeah. All right. So that was the first thing. Anyway. All right. Here we go. Y'all ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This comes from Branzino _ then a bunch of numbers, 129060. Parajunkie here. I'm so excited to watch you guys investigate the Conjuring House.
Wee.
I'm on Pacific time, so I asked off of work to attend the live stream.
Yay!
Nice, very cool.
We don't require you to take your PTO, but if you do it, we love it.
We appreciate join us. It fully.
Yes. I wanted to ask what each of you are excited about. Debria is, of course, included in this question. So
she's excited about coming home.
I read this because I vet the questions, obviously. When I read this, Debria said going home after.
Yep.
You called it.
Yeah. okay. So that's hard. I think it's just clarify. I'm excited for clarification of all the stories that I've heard about the Conjuring House. That's what I'm looking forward to, is getting an in-person, in-depth experience with it. Because it's just like, it's one of those houses that everybody's obsessed with it. You know, it's like, I've read so many things about it. I've heard so many stories about it. I've watched people's live streams of them doing the Conjuring House. But it's like, I just feel like it's going to be different when I actually am there. And so, I'm excited to see some creepy looking entities. I love that. That's cool. I mean, if I'm going to go there, I want to see the broke neck lady. Like, that's dope. Yeah. You know, not for her, but like, it's dope. Also, just excited to see what kind of theories we come up with. Because I feel like every person who's gone there as of recently has taken something different from the house.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's definitely what I'm lit about. I'm just excited to be there.
Christopher?
Yeah, I think that it boils down to why I'm excited to go to any site with history. You know, there's something about being in the place. So it's not necessarily that I'm thinking, oh, I can't wait to get, you know, some kind of footage or some kind of experience. It's that this is a place that had been the focal point for many, many years of one of the more phenomenal hauntings recorded in American history. So it gives you this opportunity to be in the place, you know, being in the room where it happened. That really does heighten your comprehension and understanding of the stories that are being told. So I'm really looking forward to cementing what I had heard, what I had seen, what I have read into a physical place. Because those things, you know, I've talked about before, like going to a place of great historic significance and just knowing that something happened there, just knowing innately, oh, this is the place where, you know, if you've gone to battlefields, if you've gone to, I went to Dachau when I was very young. If you've ever been to these places where history had dug a trench right there, when you're standing in it, you know. So I'm looking forward to taking it out of my imagination and putting it in reality.
For sure. I would say I'm most excited about the nature. I'm a nature guy, and I'm excited to go out on the grounds, like in the dark. Maybe it'll be snowing.
It probably will be.
Yeah, and you know, just kind of like, yeah, I don't know, just vibing out there, and that's gonna be pretty cool.
With the dead bodies.
Yeah.
Frozen dead bodies.
Frozen dead bodies. And just seeing what's up with that. And then I'm also very excited about seeing Debris freak out constantly. That's going to be a you know, key source of entertainment for this documentary we're making.
She also doesn't know that they don't have beds in this place. And so she is going to have to...
Well, they have beds, but they don't. You can't sleep in them. Like you gotta. You gotta.
It's like a museum. It's like it's doing an overnight in a museum.
It really is.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't really sleep.
And technically, yeah, I was gonna say, I imagine that when it comes time to be drowsy and near sleep, we should all be in the same room.
Yeah.
We're not doing any isolation sleeping. It's like, Debria, go into the basement. Take
and
a nap.
And I'm also excited about seeing the Wi-Fi speeds and seeing that they are good.
have you contacted them about it at all?
I'm going to.
Yeah, give them a call because, you know, it's very possible that all they need is base Wi-Fi to run their, you know, their register. So they may not have high speed or anything close to it.
There's nothing we could do either way because we have a mobile hotspot. So it's okay. I'm checking that out, but everything's good.
All right.
Cool. All right. So let's see. Next question. That was a great question. Thank you, Brand
Thank you.
Zeno. All right. And this one comes from Tyler Yu. Madison. Can you give me some insight on money spells? I've been trying to do my own because, like most others, I need a little extra cash and nothing is working. I work two jobs and still don't get paid enough. I would love any insight you could give me on this. I don't think I'm doing it right. The interweb is too scattered.
Okay, so money spells are tricky. You have to be so specific of what you are trying to gather. Because if you just give, like, so the problem with money spells is people will just say, I want $500. But they don't say where they want that $500 to come from. They don't say where that $500 is going. So the biggest issue is sometimes people will say, like, I want all this money. And then somebody passes away because they're like, you got an inheritance check for that exact amount of money or, you know, things like that. I mean, the classic is that you take two bay leaves and you write basically on both of them the amount of money that you want, where you want it coming from, and who you want it going to. You put one in like a sacred place, so like an altar, things like that. And then you take the other one and you keep it in your wallet and you carry that with you. That's the classic way to do it. I mean, people make money bowls and stuff. You know, that's pretty good. That's a little bit more in depth and things. But the easiest way to go about it is the bay leaf method. But you just have to be so specific. If you're doing it with intentions of desperation too, sometimes it doesn't work. But also if you're going to do it, you have to be so sure that it's going to work with any spell. If you even have like an inkling, a doubt in your abilities, they don't tend to pan out the way that you want it to. Because doubt is the worst thing you can do in witchcraft. You have to trust your abilities. And so it's hard if it's like, that's your like first spell ever. And it's, usually you start with like protection magic or you do like little, you know, little here and there type spells just to get your footing. And then you work your way up as you gain your trust in your, practice and things like that. And I don't know how far you are with your magic and things like that. I had a friend who did a bay leaf spell. She was so mad. She's from Kentucky, and so on her altar she has this little dish that has Kentucky on it, And so she did the bay leaf thing, and she was like, I want to, you know, pay off my debt and stuff. So she's like, I want like $10,000. That would like help so much. Like, I'd be able to clear like all the stuff. I pay off my car, yada, yada, yada. And so she puts the bay leaf with just $10,000 on the Kentucky dish on her altar. And then she carries the other one with her. 2 days later, her dad calls her. He's like, you're never going to believe what just happened. And she's like, what happened? He's like, I won $10,000 in a scratch off. And it went to her dad, who lives in Kentucky.
There you go.
And she was so mad. She's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, because right now a lot of the rage is manifestation.
Yeah.
And the baseline of manifestation is to be of the mindset and the positivity that what you want is already yours. You have to bypass it. You have to create the rule of attraction. You have to do these things. And my wife did a money manifestation, asking for a very specific amount of money. And within 3 days, it came to her.
Mm-hmm.
But that same day, an unexpected bill for $200 more than the amount showed up as well. And I was like, that's hilarious, because A, it worked, and B, there was a balancing act going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you know, your intent and your idea needs to marry with who you are at the moment, because you have to change. You know, it's true. Desperation tarnishes what you're doing, because you're obsessed with where you are and not where you want to be.
Right.
You have to inhabit the place you want to be, the place where you have the money, the place where you have the thing you want. You have to inhabit that place, and then everything around you will bend towards providing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of how spells work. That is kind of how manifestation works. But the truth of the matter is, we are planets with our own gravitational pull. We will pull to us what makes the most sense for the ecosystem we live in. So start really thinking of living an abundant life and being full of abundance. And ideally, nature will bend to your power.
I would recommend over money magic right now. I mean, obviously, I know you're saying that you're financially feeling the pressure and stuff like that. But I would recommend, it's going to sound weird, but doing a little bit of glamour magic.
Mm.
I don't know what your gender
identity. Glamour magic.
Yes. Oh. So I don't know what your gender identity is, but glamour magic does not mean that you have to like put makeup on and like, no. You know, like feel like a fabulous like movie star or something. It's about doing things that make you feel luxurious.
Yes, absolutely.
With intent to make you feel like I am bigger and badder than
wealthy.
I'm wealthy. I am healthy. I'm all those. There's like a mantra on TikTok that people loved. Essence, glamour magic.
Right.
And I would say start with that to work your way up to feeling like, even if you're living in your means, you can still feel luxurious and feel, you know, like you're living your best life with a budget.
And look into also 369. 369, developed by Nikola Tesla, who came up with this equation through meticulous scientific and mathematics study. So the 369 method is basically a type of manifestation where you do something and you repeat it in intervals of 3, 6, and 9. There's lots of things you can look up on it. So just look up the 369 method. And it is also supposed to be about creating a path to what you want through the regimented repetition of the idea of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, last point, people also swear by dream boards. Mm-hmm. If you put something up where you're visualizing exactly what you want, and then it eventually starts coming to you because you're putting
it in
your...
And this is a common practice of New Year's. Mm-hmm. So since we're coming up to the New Year, you know, a great New Year's activity, even on New Year's Day, is to make a dream board of the year coming up. Mm-hmm. So like maybe on New Year's Eve, make it a little ritual to, you know, cut out pictures of things that you want, you know, and write out things that you feel are or do you in the new year, what you really want. Because, yeah, dream boards are an excellent manifestation tool.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So. All right. All right. This next one was actually a comment, and was not sent in, but basically, Gamma R said, "I need Batrick and Jingles merch. When is it coming?" Yeah,
it will come eventually.
It's on its way.
Yes. No. It's coming. It's coming. Actually, it's coming. Actually, pretty soon. I just have to get to designing it. But I think it's a great, like, kind of like good versus evil type of deal. Like we were talking about it before. That there's evil, jingling. But yeah, we'll definitely do that. I guess I could do some like photography and like do like some Photoshop too and make some.
You could probably take photos of Jingles and Batrick and then put it in Photoshop and like make it into like trace it into like an illustration or something.
Yeah, no, I definitely could do that.
That could be cool.
Well, cool. All right. Oh, Chris is going to use an app. I knew that was coming.
We should put Jingles in a Christmas outfit in December so he can be Jingle Bells.
Jingles bells. Goodness gracious.
I do not like him facing me at all.
He's unnerving.
So he is unnerving.
I saved one of the bigger ones for last.
Okay.
All right. Is everybody ready for it?
Yes.
Here we go. Okay. This comes from Yolama T. I found this podcast from the TikTok video of Chris talking about Smurfs.
I'm sorry. So sorry, everyone.
Yes. What a way to find us.
I know.
I couldn't stop laughing. I work as a trauma nurse, so I need laughs often.
Aw.
It can be a very depressing job. Thank you for always telling fun and engaging stories, you two. Anyways, I'll stop blabbing and ask my question. It needs a little backstory. A few months ago, I had a gunshot victim come in. Mm. I rather not say where I'm from because I'm sure a bunch of people listen to this podcast. Violence is pretty common here, but we're a tourist destination. And like most touristy places, the tourist district is very safe while surrounding areas aren't.
Yeah.
Still don't want to discourage anyone from coming. Anyway, disclaimer over. An elderly man came in and he was still alive and conscious, but very close to death. We couldn't do much more than we were already doing, but make him as comfortable as possible through all the chaos happening around him. In his last few minutes, the man looked over towards the infusion pump, smiled, and said, "Mama." Mm. And about 4 minutes later, he was gone. I was astonished because looking back at it, it looked and felt like he really saw his mother. Do you all believe that people close to death can see ghosts or family members of ghosts of family members? Sorry for the lengthy story. You can cut out some of the fluff if needed.
What? No,
that wasn't lengthy at all. That's great.
That's actually one of the most common ways that, because I've talked to
there's a term, isn't there?
There is,
which I can't remember what the term is. There's an actual term for final moments seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It just escapes me right now.
Regardless, though, I don't know why I've met so many people who have worked in hospice. I guess because we're in Savannah, you know, it's like there's quite a few older people. There's, yeah, I guess.
And we are pretty preoccupied with death.
So. Yeah, I don't know. But regardless, I've met a lot of people who've worked in hospice, and a lot of them tell me that's how they know that one of their patients are going to be going is because about a week or so. Usually, before they start crossing that line, they'll say like, "Oh, my daughter's coming to visit me," or like, "Oh, my daughter said she'd be back tomorrow," or things like that, or whatever it be.
Right.
You know, their loved one, their husband. You see it a lot with their husbands or wives, or people. Somebody who's crossed over already coming back to retrieve them, and I think it comes from a place of. Maybe it's a lot less scary to die if you see a familiar face of somebody who you loved in this life who's there to help you through that process. And so it's extremely common. And I wouldn't be surprised if that it won't be the last time that you have that experience. Hopefully you don't have to. I mean, you're a trauma nurse, so you deal with death quite a bit, I'm sure. But, you know, it's I wouldn't be surprised if you had more experiences like that with patients who come in and, you know, see their moms or their just somebody.
Grandmothers or loved ones who had passed over. Yeah, sure. Highly. Yeah. You could fill a book with those stories. And many of them, you know, there's even the you'll hear this a lot where a person's just clinging on to life until the last family member arrives.
Yes.
To say goodbye. You know, I think those things go hand in hand, is, you know, that the spirit is so connective and connected that it maintains itself even in the most bleak of circumstances. Love reaches out and tries to facilitate these things. So it makes sense that the loved ones who have passed on come to comfort and to guide, and that you wait for your loved ones to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm. And it's if you look into it in the belief system that there's soul families, it's there's so many cultures that believe that it's like your souls are connected in some capacity and that you go through different lifetimes together. And so it would make sense if you have a soul connection to somebody that they would be coming to retrieve the other half of them, you know, to be like, okay, we're moving on to the next thing, getting prepared for whatever's next, you know.
That is a nice thought.
It is. It is nice. People also see their pets sometimes. You can have soul connections to your animals even. I've heard stories of people saying that, like, their grandmother was on her deathbed and she started talking about how her little dog, you know, was coming up onto the bed and it's like, oh, Susie came to see me, you know. It's like, and Susie had died like 10 years prior or something. I know that's how JT would want to be greeted, is,
oh yeah,
is,
yeah,
Argyle.
We've talked about that though.
Yeah, is Argyle would come and throw a tennis ball at his dying face, and it's
that,
like,
sounds about right.
Like, throw it.
Throw it. It'll be super wet.
Yeah.
And it'll just like pop.
Slimy, right, gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her, so her question actually made me think about something that I don't think we've discussed, and it's something that's actually simple. So I'm like, I'm surprised we haven't discussed it on this podcast, is, are hospitals haunted?
Oh yeah.
Like, how, I guess,
so
maybe
we have,
how haunted are they?
We have touched upon that.
Have
on
we?
Numerous, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but yeah. We never just outright.
Just outright asked.
Hospitals are very haunted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The thing about hospitals that probably garner the most haunt is the expenditure of emotion that happens, especially in the trauma unit. Because in the trauma unit, when people die, it's usually because they were shot or harmed or accident, you know, something that was unexpected. And they are young, and the people around them are so full of the knowledge of the life they could have led. And that expenditure of emotion is definitely enough to just, you know, paint the walls and make it so that it's very haunted. Anyone who works in hospitals, please write us a ghost mail, because some of the best stories occur in hospitals. People have just amazing stories. I always say that police are a wonderful source for ghost stories, because they're trained to pay attention, you know, attention to details. But hospitals are classically haunted, absolutely.
Well, because you got to think about it. Anybody who's in a hospital who's not working there are going through one of the worst things that they could go through,
absolutely,
more than likely. Yeah. And so that's expending so much energy that even if they don't die, residual hauntings are rampant in things
and
like that.
And hospitals are just literally the place where people die the most.
Mm-hmm.
You never really think about it, but and one of my favorite sitcoms was Scrubs. Loved Scrubs.
Oh, I love Scrubs.
Because it really balanced, you know, both comedy and tragedy really well. But there was an episode where they said the statistic was 1 out of 3. 1 out of 3 patients that are not, like, in the emergency room, people who are admitted into the hospital, 1 out of 3 will die. A third of the people admitted into a hospital will die. And I'm like, that seems alarmingly high. But when you think of people who have to stay in a hospital, what they're dealing with, the illnesses that cause you to stay in the hospital, you know, if it's not post-op, if it's not, you know, emergency room, those people are dealing with some serious issues. And a hospital is a big building. 1 out of 3 die. And it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a huge volume.
It makes you wonder, like, if hospitals, just like running hospitals, are they just constantly collecting ghosts?
Absolutely.
You know? Well, oh yeah.
Yes. Famously, abandoned hospitals and old hospitals are sometimes the favorite places for ghost hunters. You know, people will flock to an old abandoned hospital, and it's because so many spirits have passed. And many spirits passed in pain, in agony, with full awareness of their impending death, you know, full of fear. To me, the emotional atmosphere of a hospital definitely lends itself to ghosts. I actually saw a ghost in Walter Reed Hospital, and I remember very clearly being terribly shaken by it, but knowing that, well, of course, well, of course, there are going to be ghosts in this hospital.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's especially with hospitals that were older and are now abandoned, who had like syphilis units or tuberculosis units or things like that. Those are so haunted because what traumatic ways to die. I mean,
and especially like in the 40s, 50s, where a lot of the experimentation on people who had these diseases were terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what they were trying to do to get ahead of it and to stave it off. And in some cases, like we have the Oatland Island Wildlife Preserve was actually a syphilis hospital in the 30s, 40s.
We have a whole episode on that.
Yep.
You want to hear about it.
And they actually allowed the syphilis to run its course on a lot of their patients as a study as to the full effects of syphilis on human beings. And it was horrifying to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And it, you know, a lot of that was because they didn't have proper treatments to begin with. They could have maintained it, but some of the stories that you hear coming out of it, you're like, what? You're like,
what?
And now you can go in there and pet a possum.
You can.
Yeah.
You can give a possum a big old kiss.
Yeah.
Kiss the possum.
Also, just a disclaimer about possums. Don't ever kill possums because they
eat ticks.
They eat ticks. They eat 5,500 ticks.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
and possums, they do appear to be giant rats that are very scary when you corner them.
I love them.
But they're actually kind of sweet. Yeah.
They're cute little rats.
Although, my poor mom, we used to have a swimming pool when I was growing up, and a possum had fallen into the pool, and my mom's trying to save the possum.
Oh, no.
And so she's got this thing, and it's a rainy night, and she's got the net to pull the possum out. And as she's pulling it up, she's looking at the possum, and it looks like it's covered in tumors, and the tumors are moving, and she's just like, they were babies.
Yeah.
But she couldn't, there's no way to tell. She just looked, and so she like catapults because it was so disturbing to her.
Possum
and,
ball.
Yeah. My mom was so guilty about catapulting the possum.
Well, that's like the saddest thing, total side tangent, but really sad death thing that possums do is it's really, I don't know why they naturally have this instinct, but when the mom, if a mom dies and the babies are left abandoned, the babies have an instinct to just go drown themselves. And so that happened one time.
So bizarre.
It's so weird. That happened one time when I was growing up in Florida. We had a possum die underneath our house. We lived in rattlesnake country. It happens, you know. Like it probably got bit by a diamondback or something. But my poor dad came out one day and there was just a bunch of dead baby possums in the pool.
Yeah.
And he's like fishing them out, but one of them didn't do that. And it was so scared. It went up the porch. Oh. And my dad is a big like barbecue guy. So he always would have like bags and bags and bags of like wood chips and stuff on the porch. And I came out one day to feed the stray cats. And I heard this little squeak and rustle behind the bags of wood chips. And I pulled it back and there's just this itty bitty baby possum.
Baby possum.
Behind the wood chips. And it was so scared, but it was so little that it couldn't like make noises properly. So it was like, like showing its teeth at me. And it's like, I'm scary. I'm like, you're so cute. I named it Eliza. It didn't live very long, but Eliza the possum.
It's got dark.
All right. Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, you nursed it back to health and you had a pet possum and
I wish
it went out into the wild.
No,
that's how you end a story.
No.
Madison.
No. But the point is, Eliza was the ultimate possum because she defeated the instinct.
She defeated the instinct, sure.
You know, she was like, that's dumb.
That's dumb. I'm going to live in the wood chips.
And so she just, until she passed, she just ate cat food all the time.
That is a very thin actually, silver lining.
Eating, yeah. eating cat food is, yeah. It's got to be better than eating ticks.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Just real fast, going back to the hospital, one other thing that I was thinking
oh, right.
about. Yeah. Well, what, you know, it's super interesting to me. I don't know why. But one of the other things I was thinking about is my last question here is what do y'all think about spirits leaving hospitals to go haunt places that they want to haunt, like their house or something like that, versus ones that maybe get stuck in the hospital?
That's an excellent question because, and I think we might have touched upon it before, but a single spirit can haunt multiple locations.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
absolutely. Because you're talking about residual haunting, you're talking about time displacement, you're talking about all kinds of things cause a spirit to allow it to haunt multiple locations. Being at the place you died, very common for a spirit. And then we think, well, then the ghost walks to its home. No. At the home, there is enough energy and enough love and enough things to manifest an aspect of the spirit. Now, it's not. That does not mean it's purely residual. It can be an intelligent haunt, but it is utilizing, feeding upon, and manifesting through memories, love, and the energy of the place. Hmm. We had talked about the fact that living people can be haunting places, places in your life that were of immense significance, oftentimes trauma, but sometimes joy. Your spirit can resonate in that area, and people might encounter something and they're like, I see a little boy. It turns out that little boy was you when you're 10 years old. That's possible. It's because what we understand of haunting is the idea that I killed a body and then this spirit that wore the body like a suit and walked around in it is the only thing that represents who we were in life. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is everything that we influence, everything that we touch, everything that we do carries in it our energy. And there are reserves in certain places where that energy is strong enough to manifest as an aspect of ourselves.
Let's also not negate the fact, too, that there are some people who live in the hospital for a very long time, and they see that hospital. It's sad, but they see that hospital room as their home.
That's very true, too.
It's not uncommon for people to find comfort. It sounds strange if you've never been through it, but there are people who find comfort in being in a hospital when they've been very sick for a long period of time, and they live—
Because it eases their pain.
Exactly. So I could see why some spirits choose to not want to leave, because they lived so many years of their life in pain, and this was the only place that ever gave them comfort and attention and tried to help them.
Also, side note— A ghost will follow something that interests them. So if you're, of interest to a spirit, that ghost can follow you from the hospital. And it may have nothing to do with you. It may have nothing to do with anything in your environment. But it was like, that person's fascinating. I'm going to follow that person. As a matter of fact, I think that is the plot to Insidious 2, mm-hmm. is that the ghost of the main scary ghost followed Patrick Wilson's character home, attached to him from the hospital. That is not uncommon. And, the classic stories are walking by a cemetery. And you hear this superstition, don't whistle in a cemetery. It's a common thing. And you imagine that it's, be respectful is the message. But the truth of the matter is you gain the attention of a spirit. You're whistling. The spirit sees you and may follow you home. And then you've got a new best friend.
Beware of the hitchhiking ghost.
Beware of the hitchhiking ghost. Yeah. This is a theme. Mm-hmm. We've stumbled upon a theme.
Yeah.
Hitchhiking ghost.
Well, cool.
Well, all righty, y'all. Thank you guys so much for sending in your questions. If you have a question that you want to ask us, you can use Ghostmail, which is our email. So it's ghostmail@hauntedcitypodcast.com. Do just try to put question in the subject if you're going to send that, so that I can, differentiate between the ghost mails and the questions. So that way, everybody's getting their answers to whatever it is. But yeah, cool. Thank you guys so much. And my name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And stay spooky, y'all.